Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. We're talking NFL because it is a Football Friday, and we want you to chime in on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the number that you need to get on board. Jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. In Gojo, assuming that the Colts beat the Jacksonville Jaguars, and let's face it, that's a low bar to clear, there's only one AFC playoff spot that ends up being up for grabs, and that would be the Chargers and the Raiders deciding that in the Sunday night finale in Week 18. So I got to ask you, if you had to put your money on one of those teams to come through and get that seventh playoff spot in the AFC, who's it going
to
be?
Man, I would like to punt on this one if you could really give me the option in this one. Chris, it just seemed to be the Chargers. While I think the more talented team, I think the team with the quarterback that can certainly be more impressive in the long run in Justin Herbert, who are 3-point favorites walking into this game, I'm terrified of them because they have been so up and down this year. The Chargers got a win early in the season where Joey Bosa basically called out Derek Carr and said he got shook in critical moments of this game here. I thought the Raiders were going to lose their last game and miss out on the postseason because of that. That being said, looking at this one, I'd probably lean toward the Chargers here. I've seen Justin Herbert do things that have dropped my jaw. I understand their rush defense has been suspect at times this year, and the Raiders can certainly take advantage of that. Derek Carr's been much steadier down the stretch here, but Joey Bosa will be on the field for the Chargers, and so I'm going to rock with that team and say that that talent's going to pick the right week to get hot.
Yeah, the Chargers are clearly the more talented team, but it's also about who's playing the best football. And right now, I think you got to give the edge to the Raiders, right? They've won three straight games. In the last three, the Chargers are 1-2. So I don't know if they're necessarily trending in the right direction in terms of overall execution. The thing I will say is the Chargers playmakers got to come to the party, offensively and defensively. If you look back to their matchup early on in the regular season, that offense was able to have an incredible amount of balance. They threw it 41 times, and they ran it 34 times, and Austin Eckler had a day. So I think if the Chargers are going to pull this off, it's going to take that similar formula. But if you're Gus Bradley, the Raiders' defensive coordinator, you've got to be able to find ways to be able to create negative plays on that Chargers offense because they do have a glut of weapons, and I don't know if that Raiders defense can consistently hold up against both the run and the pass. So you got to find a way to be disruptive, and that includes probably breaking the tendency that you have not to blitz. I want to say the blitz rate for the Raiders on defense is right around 13%, and I think you're probably talking about doubling that if you're going to have a chance at being able to throw this offense to some negative plays and give yourself a chance to be successful in this matchup.
Yeah. Breaking tendency is going to be an important part of this. I think for both teams here, for the Chargers on the other side, the one tendency you're going to have to keep an eye on has been Hunter Renfrow, because you want to talk about consistency down the stretch. Hunter Renfrow's been an absolute menace, especially on third down for the Raiders. The one thing that, again, gives me pause, and shame on me for not that gives me hope, is shame on me for not mentioning him with Joey Bosa in that same breath, because we've seen the way their defense takes a hit up front. But, Chris, if we go back to that loss against the Kansas City Chiefs in the back half of this season, where we saw Travis Kelce basically go untouched for a drive because you had Derwin James off the field for that one, a guy who, again, has been lights out, is such a difference maker in the middle of that defense for this Chargers team, the former Florida State project. I really think the combination of those guys together on that defense does enough here because, Chris, you look on that other side, Derek Carr, who we mentioned before, and we've got that poll up on ESPN Radio's Twitter account right now. There is an interesting amount of pressure on Derek Carr heading into this game, mostly because of where the franchise sits, right? Rich Bisaccia sitting there as the interim coach after Gruden got fired. We don't know what his future looks like, if they want to go and maybe try and angle for Jim Harbaugh. He's also, Derek Carr, not a guy who's owed a ton of money going into next year. So certainly the team could get away from him or try and keep him around for even longer if they want. So a lot of his football future feels tied to, hey, can you continue to stamp what you've done the back half of the season and make this a playoff squad in 2021?
I hear where you're coming from, Gojo, and there is something to be said for the case that you're making, but the one thing that I look at with Derek Carr is all that this team has been through. He's been the constant. He's been the steadying force with all the adversity that they face. Not just the situation with John Gruden, but the tragedy with Henry Ruggs, all of the injuries, guys missing games due to COVID. Derek Carr has been steady when it comes to giving his team a chance to compete more often than not. So I don't know how much pressure is on him in terms of performance and his long-term future with the Raiders organization. I do think he has an opportunity to change the narrative around his career if he's able to somehow vault this team into the playoffs and being able to reel off four straight wins in the process. I do think that changes how people, not just in NFL circles, but people in the media and people that are fans of the NFL overall, view Derek Carr. I think he starts to vault into that conversation of being one of those top 8 to 10 quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Well, yeah, Chris, he'd have the opportunity to make people actually care about what Derek Carr does, right? Because that's the issue, and we always heard it as players, when you stop getting coached, that's when you know something's really gone wrong, when no one cares enough to critique you. And that at times seems to be what's happened with Derek Carr. I mean, outside of one almost MVP caliber season where unfortunately injury robbed him of being able to finish that one out, this has kind of been the story where Derek Carr seems perennially one of the underrated quarterbacks of the game. A guy who is steady and leads that team, like you said, that's been on display this year. And I guess that you're right. You reshaped it the way I should have in this spot, which is he's got a chance to elevate himself to that next level so that when we go into next season, maybe he's seen as the guy, this Raiders franchise that's looking for a face to put on their organization going forward, can feel comfortable doing that with. Or maybe if they really do just want to change things up so much, now Derek Carr becomes one of those coveted quarterback names we talk about potentially being uprooted this offseason.
You're right about that, and the latter point you made is an interesting one, but I will say this, if Derek Carr does get this team into the playoffs, all of a sudden you're talking about this being the most attractive coaching job this hiring cycle and being able to get the most qualified candidates. And so if you're Mark Davis, that's something that you're absolutely rooting for, because you want to try to get somebody in here in a leadership position on your coaching staff that you can feel comfortable with taking this team into the foreseeable future. So I think from a pressure standpoint, you can apply that part of it to Derek Carr. There's a lot riding on this in terms of the franchise's long-term future. If he's able to step up and get this done, all of a sudden now you're going to attract the best and brightest when it comes to coaches being interested in the Raiders' job this offseason.
Derek Carr is owed no guaranteed money heading into next season. He's just a $19.8 million cap hit. As like you said, right now, maybe one of the 12, 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL set to become an unrestricted free agent in 2023.
That's crazy. It's
wild.
Insane. Think about this, Gojo. The Raiders are paying Derek Carr $1 million more than the Cleveland Browns will be paying him next, playing Baker Mayfield next year. $1 million. Think of $1 million.
And that's what happens to a lot of these quarterback contracts when we talk about him, guys like Jimmy Garoppolo, is it looks like such a bloat at the beginning. And then when you get to those last few years, if you can get someone playing like Derek Carr, all of a sudden you're operating out of the bargain bin right now. So if Derek Carr would like to make it very clear that the price has gone up, this would be a great game to start doing that, as them and the Los Angeles Chargers have the true win-in-your-in game of Week 18 in the NFL. It got flexed to Sunday Night Football for a reason. And God help our friend Jason Fitz, lifelong diehard Raiders fan and co-host of Spain and Fitz. I am going to be with Jason on Sunday this week during this game, and I am very afraid. I may have to live stream just so you guys can see the Jekyll and Hyde transformation for one of the nicest guys at ESPN.
You better be careful, man. You might pull back a nub with Jason Fitz watching that Raiders game. I'm telling you.
He is an angry little elf. That is,
yeah,
for sure.
He's a feisty nugget now.
He's a feisty nugget. Jason Fitz, confirmed feisty nugget. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. If you guys want to get at us on the AFC picture, or again, who's under the most pressure heading into Week 18 of the NFL season as we try and punch some playoff tickets. But coming up next, there's always a lot of pressure for the Dallas Cowboys. Why some news today about who's available to this team on the injury front should make some decisions into this weekend painfully simple for Jerry Jones and Big D. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, week 18 is upon us. And we got to go to a division that I'm very familiar with, that being the NFC East. 8 of my 11 years in the National Football League I spent between the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants in said division. And you got a primetime matchup between two teams that are going to be in the postseason, between the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles. Both of them don't really have much to play for in this situation. I know there can be some scenarios where seeding could potentially change for them, but they seem like they're pretty set. The Eagles are going to be a wild card team, and then the Dallas Cowboys feel like they're locked into that four spot. I know that they have an obscure path to being able to get to the two seed, but that would involve the Tampa Bay Buccaneers losing, the Los Angeles Rams losing, and the Arizona Cardinals losing. I think it's highly unlikely that all three of those things happen to vault Dallas into the two spot if they beat the Philadelphia Eagles. And so now that begs the question, what should Dallas do with their starters going into week 18?
Yeah, you and I talked about this a lot yesterday, Chris, and if someone wanted to tell me it was a little more of a toss-up yesterday because they valued things like getting one more bit of work, rolling into the postseason on a better note offensively than you did coming off of last week, let this current injury report be the thing that takes you away from this. So you already, yesterday, had two players, Micah Parsons, your all-everything rookie linebacker, and your star left tackle, Tyron Smith, on the reserve COVID-19 list heading into that game. Tyron Smith, who's made a world of difference to your quarterback, Dak Prescott, all season long. As of today, as of 3 o'clock this afternoon, according to ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter, you are now also going to have ruled out rookie cornerback Trevon Diggs, leads your team and the NFL in interceptions with 11 on this season due to illness. Safety Jayron Kearse with a hamstring injury, and backup running back Tony Pollard with a foot injury for Saturday night's game against the Eagles. Chris, with all of that in mind, so arguably your two most productive defensive players, a backup running back who's been arguably 1B to Zeke Elliott at multiple times, and your left tackle here, why in the hell are you going to put Dak Prescott out in the middle of that? For who? What in this game?
It doesn't make sense. And then we also got to consider the Michael Gallup injury too. That's something that's potentially loom large as well. So it just doesn't make sense to put Dak in harm's way, especially with Tyron Smith not being out there to blindside tackle to protect his back. I don't get it. I don't understand the value proposition. The benefit doesn't seem like it's worth the risk. And we know that this Dallas offense hasn't been consistent down the stretch. They've got their issues. They can't run the ball when they need to. The offense slow to get going in a couple of instances. When you look back at that Arizona game for the first three quarters, they were in cruise control. It looked like they were sleepwalking. They did pick it up in that fourth quarter, but it ended up being a little too late. But in this situation, I just don't see the value in putting Dak Prescott out there. You paid him $40 million a year in a long-term contract, not for week 18 games that don't matter when you've already punched your ticket to the playoffs, but you paid him to be able to get you to go on a run once you got into the tournament. To me, the most important thing for Mike McCarthy and that coaching staff is getting the guys that you know you're going to lean on, the guys that you absolutely have to have in order to have success in the postseason, get them to the games that matter. Get them to the wild card round, everybody healthy, and then you let the chips fall where they may. But to risk a potential injury, something fluky happening in week 18 in a game where it really doesn't matter, I just have a hard time being able to accept that.
You mentioned Mike McCarthy, head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Here he was at their press conference talking about the goal of the team this week.
You know, my goal all along has been for this team to be a complementary football team. And I think, you know, when you do have a commitment, you know, sometimes doesn't always equate to the best numbers. You know, we want to be better in every situation. We're always working towards that, you know, whether it's red zone, third down, and so forth.
Generic coach speak extraordinaire from Mike McCarthy on that one. Chris, the bottom line is just what you said, though. this is going to be all about health. Hell, the NFC playoff picture overall, I think, is going to be decided by that. The Green Bay Packers just took Jaire Alexander off the COVID-19 list, one of their best secondary players. You could argue their best secondary player who's missed the majority of this season. They're hoping to get David Bakhtiari back at left tackle still here. The Cardinals designated J.J. Watt for return off IR towards the end of this season. The Rams have looked like one of the healthiest teams down the stretch. So on and on here, Chris, the last thing you want to do in this tightly bunched NFC playoff race is be the team that limps into this thing.
Yeah, I got you on that one. And I don't want to run the risk of sounding like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I do recognize the value in momentum. We just talked about the run that the Raiders are on, winning three straight games. But I also understand that once you get to the postseason, it's about being able to go 1-0 in that given week. That's what it is. And putting yourself in position to give yourself the best chance to do that. And to me, having your squad healthy and available, all the guys that you know can be difference makers, can be force multipliers, is far more important than trying to work out any execution issues or being able to work out any complementary football issues in week 18 when it really doesn't matter for you. So I just, it'd be one thing if the Dallas Cowboys had a viable path to being able to get that number two overall seed and having home field advantage until you get to the championship game. But I just don't see that happening with the dominoes that they would need to fall. And so because it seems like it's such a far-fetched idea for them to be able to get that two seed, go ahead and sit your starters, man. Let those guys rest up. Use this as a bye week and get ready for wild card weekend.
This is a veteran team whose core has been together, especially on offense, for a long time here. You're right. There is some value in momentum, but I think that is certainly outweighed with a team that has played this much football together, who's got leadership you trust, saying, hey, like you said, circle the wagons, let's get ready for this damn thing and keep it moving. That should be the formula for the Dallas Cowboys, but we'll wait and see. Maybe they'll make the right decision before we get to kickoff this upcoming weekend. As again, we've talked about multiple key players, Trevon Diggs, Jayron Kearse, Tony Pollard, Micah Parsons, Tyron Smith, all already ruled out for the Dallas Cowboys heading into this weekend's matchup against the Philadelphia Eagles. Coming up next, though, could this weekend also be the end of an era for one particular NFL franchise? We'll get to that after Chris tells you about Man in the Arena.
Join host Gotham Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, Zip Recruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio, back after this.
They said we were nuts back in the fall of 1979, saying that all sports 24 hours a day would make it on TV. And now you say we're nuts trying to start ESPN Radio? We're dead serious. We know you like us on TV, and if you do, you'll love us on radio.
30 years and counting. This is ESPN Radio. This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want you to chime in on the conversation, week 18 in the NFL, playoff scenarios. Hit us on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And Gojo, this Sunday, we could be talking about a couple of laughs for some key figures in some organizations that are really prominent in the National Football League. First, we got to start out with Russell Wilson out in Seattle. It's crazy to think that this could be his last game as a Seahawk, but we both know last few off seasons there's been a lot of noise around Russell Wilson potentially wanting to be traded out of that organization. And with the season that they've had, the first losing season in the Russell Wilson era of Seahawk football, not going to be in the playoffs, it wouldn't be far-fetched to think that this could be his last home game out there.
Yep. Now, I will give the man credit for the words that he has said, because the quotes that we got from him, I believe, in this past week were that he hopes to be able to do this still in Seattle here. Devin, do you guys have that sound pulled up in there? I don't have that on my board right here. But there is a quote from Russell Wilson talking about the Seahawks and his hopes to stay there and make this work with the team here. Let's play that now.
You know, my goal is to win more Super Bowls. And my plan is to win them here. You know, it's that simple. You know, I think that's and so that's, you know, there's nothing really else other than that. That's been always my goal, is to win multiple Super Bowls, and my plans to be here and to do that, you know. And you know, it's, you know, you take every day and you just enjoy the moment.
Yeah, Chris, not exactly the vote of confidence I'd expect, because this is Russell Wilson, right? He's never going to say the wrong thing in all of this, but we have gone through already an offseason cycle where he's going to say whatever he wants, and then we know he is going to let his camp handle the actual business of all of this. And that's before we even get to the fact that Seattle might just decide it's time to blow this whole thing up and look at what hasn't worked here, what has gone careening off a cliff with the combination of Russ and Pete Carroll finally this season.
Yeah, we know Russ is, you know, consumed by making sure that he can enhance his legacy, and a part of that is him not wanting to be the bad guy when it comes to trying to force the organization's hand and trade him when he wants to be on the move and he wants to potentially go to another franchise. Like, the fact that you had your representation list four destinations that you would be willing to be traded to last year, knowing that you have a full no-trade clause, that just speaks to Russell Wilson having one eye at where he's at in Seattle, but another eye at some potential spots, some other teams around the National Football League. So it wouldn't be a surprise for me. As a matter of fact, I expect that Russell Wilson is going to be on the move this offseason. It's just a matter of what the Seattle Seahawks are going to end up getting back and where do they go as far as their organizational structure and what they do at the head coaching spot. But yeah, I think this is the end of an era in Seattle. And I would bet money, if I had to make the choice, when we're talking about Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, whether they're both going to be back or both going to be gone, I would lean toward both of them being gone in 2022.
Chris, I completely agree with you. I don't think if you're Seattle, it makes a ton of sense to keep Pete Carroll around beyond Russell Wilson. He's already been there for such a long time period. You've got so many things you're going to need to address that this is one of those, like, do a controlled burn if you're Seattle. You had a Super Bowl and another appearance that was the almost ran in that one out of this experience. By anyone's measure south of the New England Patriots, what you did was an overwhelming success with these two guys. But it's become abundantly clear in the last year that there's just too much friction. There's too much time under task together with people whose ideologies are just far apart. And for the Seahawks, Pete Carroll's ideology is not where modern football is going. This is someone that we've looked at and wondered for a while as they brought in different offensive coordinators for the last few years and tried to make this work. Could they catch up? But really, Chris, I go back to once they got rid of Max Unger and they sent him to the New Orleans Saints in that trade for Jimmy Graham, that's when you saw the devaluing of the offensive line in front of Russell Wilson that became the focal point of his gripes this past offseason with that team. So I'm with you. I could see them both being gone. My question to you is here, you think it's more likely we see both of those guys gone out of Seattle? Or coming off this weekend, we see things go badly enough for the New York Giants against the Washington football team that Joe Judge, despite that vote of confidence from the brass up there in New York, we see him gone out of Big Blue.
Ooh, that is an interesting question, Gojo. And I like what you did right there, because rumored to be one of the places that Russell Wilson would consider would be Big Blue, the New York Giants. Mm. But if I had to bet it, I would probably say that things get blown up in Seattle, then Joe Judge end up getting clipped for the New York Giants. And I just, the way that the Giants want to operate, they want consistency. They don't want to be perceived as one of these dysfunctional franchises. And hiring and firing three consecutive coaches in a matter of 6 years is not the way that they want to do business. So I would expect that you would see changes in the front office for the Giants, but I think Joe Judge is going to be back on the sidelines for them in 2022. So there's going to be change, but not the change that Giants fans are hoping for. I know we got a couple of Giants fans that work on this show, and Devin Kane and Shannon Penn, our producer, and I know both of them want both Dave Gettleman and Joe Judge to be gone. But I think that they're only going to go one for two in that battle. I think Joe Judge is going to be back To the disappointment of a lot of Giants fans out there.
Even if it gets ugly this weekend, Chris, because we're walking into this game, like week 18, no one's got playoff stuff on the line in this game between them and the Washington football team. But Joe Judge, in his 11-minute post-game rant last week, made a very open shot at the Washington football team when he said, "You don't see our team getting in fights on the sideline," a nod to Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen's fight on the sideline for the Washington football team. He said, "We're not a clown show organization." And while, to be clear, I can't really dispute that the Washington football team has been a clown show organization for a while now under Dan Snyder, Ron Rivera didn't seem too pleased with that. And so if they got a chance to beat the brakes off of them in this game, I'd imagine they're going to take it.
Oh, yeah, you better believe that the Washington football team is going to rub their noses in it if they get the opportunity to. And just looking at the fight that that team had in them against the Philadelphia Eagles last week, this is a situation that the New York Giants better be prepared for from an intensity standpoint, because Washington is going to come in there with something on their mind. And they play a physical brand of football, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm not quite sure if the Giants are going to be up for the task, but if they're not, then that is an indictment on the head coach. And for somebody that has touted the change in the mindset, the change in the overall effort that he's seen since in the 2 years that he's been there in comparison to what it was before him, Joe Judge has got to come out there and prove that by his team being able to give maximum effort and execute at the highest levels in the regular season finale. If they don't, then I think his job should be called into question. But Gojo, I don't think that this thing can get bad enough where John Mara, the owner, is going to fire Joe Judge. I mean, he said it a month ago. He feels like he's found his version of Bill Parcells or Bill Belichick. And so with that kind of vote of confidence, it would be hard to see the owner pivot off of that in such a short period of time.
I'm with you. I think we have a chance to see Joe Judge and that era, if you can call it that, of New York Giants football continue this weekend. But Seahawks fans probably getting a last look at Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll and all they've done in the Pacific Northwest. Coming up next, though, we got to get to a questionable statement by one of our teammates and a questionable statement by one of Tom Brady's now former teammates. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ball Friday here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Gojo, I swear, some of the best conversations that we have on this show don't even make it to the airwaves. They're in between the breaks, and we're just having a debate about how winter could possibly be somebody's favorite season. I myself am a fan of the wintertime because you do have the holiday season, and it is cold outside, but I'm a big guy. I always look at it this way. I can always layer up to warm myself up. In the summertime, it's just like it's hot outside. You can't take off all your clothes. So I'm just saying, it just seems like from a practical standpoint, winter would be the season for the big fellas to come through and shine.
Yeah, you know what? Winter's got some redeeming qualities, but in general, like to have one of our producers claim that it was your favorite season, that to me is a character issue there. I'm raising a red flag off that one. I don't know if we're still doing that red flag emoji trend or not, but that one definitely throwing it up for me. Like I can't do it. I have lived up here for too damn long, Chris. You and I have both lived in the Northeast, dealt with this for too damn long. My biggest beef with winter, and for all the people that go, "I love snow," is, yeah, snow's cute to look at when you don't got to do anything with it. And
fair
it's
point.
Cute to look at for that first round of snow, but then after that, what is it? Dirt and salt all over the place. Then it's just basically a glorified, frozen, slush puppy muddle of hell. It's the worst.
Yeah, and then you get the refreeze too, right? Because it melts, and then the next day it's below freezing, so it freezes back over, and you get that black stuff. It's just, man, it gets real dicey. But I understand your criticism. When it's falling, it's all well and good, but when you got to get out there and shovel it, or when you're in the city and that white stuff starts turning into black stuff and it's all slushy, it's one of those things that you're like, man, I can get over this really, really quickly. But I'm a winter guy, man. I'll stand behind it. I enjoy it. Family's getting together, all of that stuff.
Is it your favorite season?
I'm a winter guy. It's my favorite season.
Wow.
It's my favorite season.
Wow.
It's my favorite time of year. My fiance, Melanie, she knows if she wants something from me, the best time to ask is between Thanksgiving and Valentine's Day. Like, she can pretty much get whatever she wants if she asks during that time, because it is my favorite time of the season.
Wow. Cuffin season, Chris Canty. I did not have you pegged for that guy. You know what? So this is interesting then, because Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. This spawns a larger debate then, because all this comes up, we just got a fresh 7 inches here in Connecticut. So I was out here all day going to work on that. And just recently, Chris, my family had moved. My parents live out of the state now. And so they left me as a parting gift the gas-powered snowblower.
Nice.
Absolute game changer. I was out there raising holy hell with this thing. And it was super satisfying because you're out here kicking ass with minimal effort. And it's incredible. And I just thought, all right, that's pretty good. And as usual, Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz here on ESPN Radio, 7 to 9 Eastern, had to take it too far. Because Jason then comes with the statement that he says, I would rather shovel snow than mow the lawn any day. And Chris, whether it is just straight up push mower versus hand shovel, whether it's riding mower versus snow blower, there is no world, no conceivable realm where moving snow beats cutting grass, period, end of sentence.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. We're aligned on that one. I can't argue with that. If you're cutting the grass, you pretty much got a good idea of how long that's going to take you. When you've got to shovel snow, depending on the kind of storm that's rolling through, I think it could be hours. Like, I'm just telling you, the snow, and then you could potentially have ice underneath that you're trying to dig out. When you're cutting the grass, you know that this is going to take you a certain amount of time, a finite period of time. With snow, there is that variable of, I don't know how intense the storm was, and I don't know how much effort I got to put in to actually clearing this stuff. So, yeah, I think snow is way more labor-intensive. It's more involved. Not to mention, it's usually cold as hell outside versus being able to cut the grass. You know, it's just, I don't know, man. Cutting the grass seems like it's so much more of an easier proposition than shoveling snow.
One of our ESPN radio hosts we all know and love, Chris Carlin, he tweeted out, I don't worry about dying when I mow the lawn. And I think that pretty much sums it up.
Straight up. I have never once pulled my back mowing the lawn. And before, and like, you know, even if we get out of that, because I put up a poll on Twitter, at Mike Golic Jr., your call, push mower cutting grass versus shoveling snow. I spelled snow without a W, I realize now. That looks pretty bad on my part. I have been out of school for 10 years. I'm pretty stupid right now. 4,421 votes in. It is 85% for cutting grass. Because, Chris, I can simplify it even more. I can comfortably go out and drink beer while I'm cutting the lawn. I got to work. I mean, really work to find a way to integrate drinking into shoveling snow. And even then, it's too labor intensive here. I'm going to be out there breaking my back for this, trying to drink at the same time. It's just not going to work. It's not going to work the right way. So if you can be outside enjoying an adult beverage, potentially in shorts and a tank top while doing it, versus having to bundle up and put on all that stuff and you can't drink, no. Mowing the lawn wins every time, Dev.
Nightmare scenario, though, you're mowing the lawn, right? And this has happened to people I know. You're in the riding mower, you run over the bee's nest, and then you have your beer, but it doesn't matter at that point. You're getting stung by bees. You don't have to worry about that in the winter.
You don't have to worry about bees in the winter, but black ice. You got to worry about black ice where all of a sudden now you can't. Because, Chris, you brought up the biggest enemy of all this, and anyone who's lived out here for long enough knows the minute you go out there and you let that one spot get away from you, it's packed down, it's iced over, and now you have set a booby trap for yourself here. You're going ass over tea kettle before it's all said and done. And I have seen enough videos on folks' Ring video doorbell of people getting snuck up on by black ice going down steps or coming down there. I had to once ride down my back steps on my butt to get to my car. That has never once happened in the summertime, Chris. Not once.
So you're trying to reenact one of those scenes from Home Alone, and that's what you were trying to do.
That was 100%, Chris. 100%. That was the life I had to live.
Yeah, the worst about that, man, when your back of your head is the first thing that hits, you know you're going to be in bad shape. So I'm with you all the way around. Like, mowing the lawn is so much easier than shoveling snow, and you can take it from somebody that's had to do a whole lot of both in their lifetime growing up in the tri-state area, where my parents thought I was actually the lawn service. So I had to do both in both seasons. But I will say this, when you're mowing the grass, even if it happens to be a day where it's going to be hot outside, at least you have some control over when you mow it. Like, you can do it early in the morning, you can do it late in the evening, so you're not in the middle of the sun in the dead heat. But when it's snowing and you got a blizzard or you got those blizzard-type conditions, it's a situation where you're never going to be comfortable when you got to clear out all of that snow. So I'm with you 1,000%. I'll mow the grass any day of the week over having to shovel snow.
Leave it to my mom to come in at the end and immediately put me on a poster and all of this, because she just texts me in the middle of all this and says, when you live in Arizona, you don't need to shovel snow or your grass. You just have rocks and desert.
You don't
out
have
there.
To shovel snow.
Shout
sunshine.
Out to Mrs. Golic off the top rope.
Unbelievable. Coming in and dunking on me at the last minute. Speaking of people who have dunked on me here, am I really getting ready to pick against Nick Saban in the national championship? Next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.